This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. After a deadly mass school shooting in Parkland, Florida this past winter, students are speaking up and taking action to make changes across the nation. Jillian Brooks reports on how one student in Morgantown is hoping to make a difference in West Virginia.
Rebecca Brazitis is a sophomore at Morgantown High School. She's passionate about her beliefs and working to change gun laws and school safety from the ground up, starting with her own neighborhood. Morgantown High School participated in the nationwide walkout earlier this year and hosted a March for Our Lives event after that. Brazitis also organized a town hall panel at the Church of the Brethren in Morgantown in April on issues related to guns and school safety. She says she left the event feeling inspired.
As long as we just keep on the conversation, keep talking about these issues, I think that can eventually make a bigger impact.
On February 9, 1978, a student opened fire in St. Albans, West Virginia, killing one student. It was the last high school shooting the state has seen. Although that was 40 years ago, some students here say they are worried about their safety. They suggest solutions could be banning semi-automatic weapons and having stricter background checks. Some on the other side of the gun law debate say more restrictions aren't the answer. Instead, they argue, more good guys with guns will keep everyone safer. Although background checks are required to buy a gun in West Virginia, anyone can carry a concealed gun without a permit. Nick DeMedici is the general manager at Defense in Depth, a shooting range in Morgantown. He says he still encourages buyers to get a permit. DeMedici says owning a gun comes with a huge responsibility.
A gun is the furthest thing from a magic wand you can imagine. And unfortunately, a lot of people think that they are magic wands, and then if I go buy a gun, then I'm going to be safe. Well, that is nothing could be further from the truth.
While DeMedici emphasizes responsible gun ownership, Brazitis thinks the solution is more political. She thinks buying a gun is too easy and says she's frustrated that students seem to be taking the issue more seriously than elected officials.
Even our nation leaders aren't really taking this as a big issue. Students are raising their voices and they're saying this is what we need. You know, we need less guns, and they're not really doing anything about it.
One researcher at West Virginia University says the debate around school safety has been too focused on guns, though. Dr. Walter DeCassaretti is the director of the Research Center on Violence at WVU. He says schools should place more emphasis on the value of acceptance.
We have to talk about the importance of creating kinder schools and kinder cyberspace as well, creating a cultures of support rather than marginalization.
Because Brazitis is the same age as the Parkland shooting victims, she says she feels more connected to the issues and that students are finally realizing that if they want to see change, they need to make it happen themselves.
Students are now feeling a little bit more empowered and they're realizing that, oh, we're the future.
She says those students are our next leaders, and starting to make a change now can end the violence they see on a regular basis. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jillian Brooks.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:47. Areas of fog this morning. There's a chance of rain and thunderstorms in the south and the east, becoming partly sunny today with highs in the 80s. Clear skies tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs in the 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. Tourism is one of West Virginia's largest industries, bringing in an estimated $4.5 billion in revenue and providing tens of thousands of jobs. Something that's not so much of a challenge or concern for this industry is housing for the people who work in tourism. Generally speaking, in West Virginia, there's ample affordable housing that is located near the state's resorts and tourist destinations. But this isn't the case in other parts of the country. In a recent episode of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Us and Them podcast, host Trey Kay speaks with people who live in places like Nantucket, Colorado ski country, and Lake Tahoe, which are considered to be playgrounds for the wealthy. To make those playgrounds run smoothly, there's a dire need for, well, community. For this episode, Trey speaks with journalists across the country who've been reporting about a shortage of affordable living accommodations for workers in affluent vacation communities.
It's summer, the time of year when people head to vacation spots around the country. After months of living in the city and suburbs, summer beckons you to the great outdoors. We head to the beach or to the mountains or to a cabin on the lake for a week or two. Maybe you're one of the lucky ones who doesn't have to rent and you own a second home somewhere.
I think it's got the deepest and clearest water of any lake in the U.S. So they're constantly measuring the depth and clarity of Lake Tahoe.
Amy Westervelt lives in Truckee, California. That's just up the road from Lake Tahoe.
It's like a major talking point every month here.
Tahoe's natural beauty is a huge draw for tourists, especially those from the Bay Area, which is about a 3.5-hour drive. Many of them have bought second homes.
So coming out my house, I've got on the right of me a second home, on the left of me a second home. Both of those, we see the people maybe once a quarter.
The folks who buy these houses often pay $600,000-$800,000 for a second home.
Across the street is a vacation rental. It really doesn't get rented that much. I'd say maybe three times a year.
Westervelt is a freelance journalist, a busy freelance journalist, who's been renting in Truckee for about 5 years.
I write for the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post, and then I also do radio reporting for a lot of local NPR stations, and I produce several podcasts.
I heard one of Amy's documentaries in the podcast, The View From Here. She says the area around Lake Tahoe is gorgeous, but there's a dark side to this beautiful place. Lots of those vacation homes sit empty for much of the year, while people with modest incomes can't afford a place to live.
There are people living in cars pretty often, which this is a pretty severe winter area. In fact, actually, Truckee often has the lowest temperatures in the country during the winter. So it's definitely not great.
The affordable housing shortage around the Lake Tahoe area got me thinking about the movie Dirty Dancing. If you don't remember the plot of that flick, a doctor takes his family for a vacation at a summer resort in New York's Catskill Mountains. The resort is staffed by a crew of working-class people who serve the guests and in some cases keep them entertained with activities like dance lessons. At some point, the doctor's youngest daughter, Baby, discovers the resort staff have after-hours parties in their quarters and is surprised and intrigued by their dancing.
Where'd they learn to do that?
Where? I don't know. Kids are doing it in the basements back home. Want to try it? Come on, baby.
Now, before you start to think we're doing a show about the us and them class differences in dance styles, that's not where we're headed. But note to self, consider an us and them show about dancing. No, what we're focused on is how places like Tahoe, like the resort in Dirty Dancing, are playgrounds for the wealthy. And workers are needed to make the playground run smoothly. Now, you might be thinking, why should I care if rich people can't get a decent latte or have to wait a little longer to get their skis waxed? But that's not the issue we're raising. We're talking about the people who cook the food, wait on the tables, clean rooms, mow lawns, manicure the golf course, muck out the stables. And at the end of the day, those same workers need a place to lay their heads so they can get up and do it all again the next day. But based on what Amy Westervelt tells me, working-class Tahoe folks are finding it harder and harder to find a place to live near where they work. And this shortage of affordable living accommodations for workers in affluent vacation communities is a problem that's happening in places all across the nation. For this episode, we're going to check in with a few journalists across the country who've been reporting about this localized us-and-them housing divide. First, let's hear more from Amy Westervelt.
We have a pretty brisk tourism industry here, both in the summer and in the winter. When there's ski season, there are about 8 or 9 different resorts all around the lake. It's one of these places where there's not really any place that's close enough and cheap enough that it makes sense for people to like live outside the basin and commute to work. So you kind of need to have some amount of affordable housing for folks that work at the resorts and the restaurants and all those things that keep the tourism going.
So at one time, were there affordable houses, or is it just gotten to the point where what once was affordable has now become outpriced to the people who need that type of housing?
It's always been like people around here will say, oh, it's never been easy to live in Tahoe. So like the kind of thing that locals always say is that you know a local because they have at least 3 jobs. But it's gotten just particularly bad in the last 5 years. There's been a little bit of a tipping point, and most people will point to Airbnb and VRBO as kind of the key shift in that.
How does that factor?
So there's a bunch of homes that are second homes that at one point landlords might have rented out long term that have been converted to short term rentals and vacation rentals. That's happening a lot. Like I've interviewed several people who have basically been asked to leave a long term rental because the owner is converting to a vacation rental. And, you know, for owners, it makes sense. You can make as much in a week almost as you could in a month, and you don't have to deal with long-term renters. So I understand, like, if you had a house and you had spent a lot of money on it and you wanted to get some kind of return, you know, vacation rental seems like the way to go. But that leaves a lot of houses that used to be available for rent that are no longer there.
When you say that the you can tell a local is because they have 3 jobs, it's that those are the people who are doing the waiter jobs and the groundskeeping jobs and those types of things. And if they don't have those people to kind of do those services to the community doesn't function, no?
Right, exactly. Well, and then kind of related to that, it's also the teachers and the nurses and the policemen who make it possible for what I call like a real town to exist, you know, because if you lose those people, then it becomes kind of a tourist village, you know, that everyone sort of drives into and drives away from. And right now, I think there are still a few towns around the lake that function as kind of normal year-round communities, but it's getting harder and harder for them to do that.
In your piece, you interview a person by the name of Stacy Caldwell, who is from the Mountain Housing Council. Mm-hmm. And she makes this suggestion about unlocking some of the vacant homes in the area.
Yeah.
First of all, I'd like to know, what exactly does it mean to unlock? Do you just basically come along with a master key and say, we're opening this home, you people who need it, come right on in? I mean, I know that may not be exactly right, but I mean, do these owners of the home actually, are they amenable to this kind of solution?
Yeah, to varying degrees. So there are a few examples of things people have kind of just like worked out amongst themselves. So one is a guy that we talked to who was looking for a place when he first moved up here. And I think it was like a friend of a friend introduced him to someone who owned a second home. And they worked out this deal where he functioned as sort of like a caretaker. And then, you know, he was like, whenever you want to come up, just give me, you know, a week's notice and I can either go camping or go stay with a friend or whatever. And it actually worked out that they became friends and almost like roommates. And so then when this guy sold that house and bought another house, he brought his, you know, kind of local roomie with him. And because he was like, this is a great setup.
We've been listening to an excerpt from WVPB's Us and Them podcast episode, Housing in Paradise. To hear the entire episode, download the Us and Them podcast from wherever you get your podcasts or online at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.